from sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode number 215, where I'm joined by my good friend Terry Lance for another Mindset Matters episode. If you have been listening to the new Fasting Method podcast and have listened to the latest episode out this week, you'll have got some really helpful and practical tips and strategies for recovering from the holidays and indeed just getting through the holiday season. So if you haven't checked out the podcast already, please do. It's a fantastic new podcast and I'm very much enjoying and benefiting from learning some great new fasting information as I edit it. But Terry and I were long overdue for another Mindset Matters episode, and so it made me think that it would be the perfect subject for us to talk about as well, coming at it much more, of course, from the mindset direction, that being Terry's speciality. As is so often the case when I'm having conversations with Terry, she makes me think about things in my own life, and I often end up having a bit of a mini therapy session. So I hope I didn't make this episode a little bit too much about me. I do think, though, probably that some of the problems I have, you have too. So I often think when I get into these conversations that I'm quite possibly speaking for you too. I hope so anyway, or at least I hope so if you too will get some benefit from it as I do. I'm sure I don't need to tell you about Terry, as you surely must know her and enjoy listening to her by now. She's been on the podcast many a time. So before heading over to our chat, I will just do a quick roundup of what's been going on here this week. Things have been ticking over much as usual. Although I have to say I haven't been feeling particularly well this last week. I'm not exactly ill, but I don't feel very well, if that makes any sense. I'm not entirely sure what the problem is. It's like that feeling, you know, when you're coming down with a cold, but you don't actually come down with a cold. And I just feel very drained and tired all the time. It's basically just very tiresome. Anyway, I'm trying not to let it interfere with my day-to-day life. And I have, of course, been going down to the sea every morning. This morning and yesterday, though, was far too rough to go in. I did see some other brave people in already on both occasions, but it was just that bit too rough for me. And my own personal rule is, if in doubt, sit it out. So that's what I did. If there had been more people around, I might have ventured in, because I always figure then there's probably somebody who will help pull you out, which is usually the time when you run into problems. So instead, I just parked my bum, drank my coffee, and watched the waves. And that, of course, ticks so many of the boxes for the reasons why I go down there in the first place. Yesterday, I even managed to spot a seal very briefly, and I'd remembered to take my little pot of seeds in case I saw the very cute little birds that I've discovered are called turnstones. Very aptly named, as it turns out, because they do indeed turn stones, looking, I guess, for little bits and pieces to eat. Well, they were in luck yesterday and today because they got some tasty seeds from me. So I always head down there with my swimming costume on, ready to go in, but fully prepared to sit it out if there's any doubt as to whether or not it's safe. The rough weather does tend to sort of come and go in waves, to excuse the pun, and I think we're coming down into some calmer seas the next few days, so hopefully I'll be able to get back in. It doesn't help that the time of day I go quite early on means that it's high tide at the moment, which just makes it all the more difficult. At low tide, actually, even if it is quite rough, you can usually at least go and splash about, but not at high tide. I would guesstimate that the waves were sort of curling over at well over a metre and a half. And when that's on loose shingle, it's really not sensible to be trying to run out in front of them. And when they crashed, boy, were they ever crashing with such a force that if it were to catch me, it would send me flying. So I just enjoyed sitting and watching them instead. The weather mostly has been very nice. There was one morning when there was a layer of frost over all the pebbles, but it was the most beautiful sunny blue skies morning to be going into the sea. I really hope we have more of those days over the winter. Bracing, I think, would be a good word to use, and exhilarating, and maybe just a little bit crazy, but definitely in a good way. We've only had one really miserable day this week where I misjudged the break in the weather and took the two youngsters out for our walk. And although they always enjoy their walk, whatever the weather, they weren't overly impressed by getting soaking wet in the driving cold rain. Rocket was shivering so pathetically that I ordered the coats that I've been umming and ahhing about for several weeks. They arrived today, only to find out that two out of three are the wrong size and all a bit too small. He lucked out, actually, because Amy's fits him. And I have to say, he looks very smart. I'm not a great believer, really, in dressing up dogs, but they did look so miserable the other day that I thought it would be good to have some cozy coats on hand for such days over the winter. I think I mentioned last week I have a few outings coming up, the first of which starts on Friday when I'm going over to Brighton to meet up with my mum to see the Rocky Horror Show. I'm not even sure, to be honest, that I've watched it all the way through on TV, so it's going to be great fun to go and see it live in the theatre in Brighton. And we are going out for what looks like a very nice tapas meal in a restaurant just around the corner beforehand. Next up, I'm down to London on Sunday to go to a panto with the family. Now, if you're not a Brit, you probably don't know what a panto is, and it's not the easiest thing to describe. So probably the best thing, if you're interested, is to have a look online. I think the one I'm going to see is Aladdin, but I'm not entirely sure. But to sort of sum it up, the hero is almost always a woman dressed up as a man. The villains are almost always men dressed up as women, and there is always a huge amount of audience participation along the lines of, look out, they're behind you. And then the actors on stage will over-exaggerate, oh no, they're not, to which the audience will reply, oh yes, they are. You get the idea. Kids love it. They get to scream and shout and have a raucous time in the theatre. Adults? Well, let's just say I'm going to need to embrace my inner child to have as much of a good time as they do. And then on Wednesday, it's my birthday, and I plan to go out with a few local girlfriends to the restaurant that I went to the other day with my old school friend Kelly. I think I told you about it, the Farmyard. We had an absolutely fabulous meal there, and they do a special during the week where you can choose a selection of small plates and a glass of wine. So that sounded like a very good idea indeed. So that's the plan. And that's about it. Next week, I shall report back and let you know how they all went. And hopefully, I'll also be feeling more like my old self and shake whatever it is that's lurking around. Back to this week's Mindset Matters episode with the very fabulous Terry Lance. Welcome back, Terry, to another Mindset Matters episode. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Daisy, and thanks for having me back.
It's my great pleasure, as always. We are recording this about a week before it goes out, but we're recording it just after American Thanksgiving. And so we're right slap bang, just started the holiday season. Brits haven't really started theirs, but we're heading into December when everything starts kicking off for us. In fact, I was walking down my local little high street the other day and they were putting up the Christmas decorations. So it's all starting to feel a lot like Christmas. So I thought we could record a sort of getting through the holiday season type episode. And I'm sure you're talking about this all the time at the moment over at the fasting method with your clients. So I thought it would be a great time for you to share some of your tips and strategies and mindset wonders with us.
Thanks. I also think what we talk about today is applicable for people throughout the year.
True.
Because there are almost always some type of celebrations coming up, depending on what you celebrate in your family, in your country, in your, you know, cultural group. There are birthdays, there are family gatherings. There might be weekly family gatherings.
Weddings.
Yep. Weddings, funerals, holidays. And right now we just happen to be in the US, we're in the middle of a lot of holidays back to back. And so what I see is that a lot of people take these months as kind of a write-off. Once we hit Halloween, people say, you know what, I can't do it. I'll catch back up in January or February. And my hope is that with some of the things that you and I talk about, we can help people to avoid that. And again, not just during this season, but whatever their time of celebrations that involve food, whenever that is for them, that they can use these things year round.
Yes, because I think there is something about a certain time of year, be it this time of year or another time of year, like you say, depending on where you are, what you do culturally, how, you know, what your setup is. But yes, I think a lot of us have. We're so entrenched in doing certain things for a block of time that it's all too easy to just throw our hands in the air and like you say, just write it off. But the problem is, I think the problem is twofold here. One, you can do a huge amount of damage in a relatively short period of time. I know this. I need to work out exactly how long it was, but I put on a whopping amount of weight. You know, I went from like 85 to 125 kilos, an incredible amount of weight. I think it was in 6 months, maybe even less. It's mind-blowing how much damage you can do in a short period of time. But then the other thing is, it's all very well saying, we've all said this, well, you know, screw it. I'll start my diet on January 1st, January 2nd. Mm-hmm. But what happens when January 1st or 2nd rolls around? It often doesn't happen, does it? And before you know it, it's the summer.
And I think we've all probably experienced this in many different ways. Anytime we started a new eating plan or whatever we were doing, we would maybe do the last supper for the week ahead, meaning just eat whatever we want, all out, overindulge, because we know we're starting a diet or a plan or something. And so I think people often get to that place around these type of celebrations, the idea that, well, I'm going to have a period of time where I'm going to be off, so I might as well just go off completely. I always share an analogy that comes from a book called Breaking Up with Sugar, and the author of that is Molly Carmel. And she writes about it as eating off track. So let's say your listeners here are eating ketogenically or low carb, at least, and they get to Halloween or Thanksgiving or whatever event, and they go off track. She describes it as like you're on a car trip somewhere, you're driving, and you go off, you know, all of a sudden the road starts to get really bumpy and you go off and you realize you have a flat tire. Well, the goal is, once you recognize this, is just to fix the flat tire. But what most of us have learned to do with diet mentality is we go back to the car to get the tools, but instead we get a giant machete, we walk back out, walk around the car, and we slash the other three tires too.
Yeah, just to make sure that we can't get back on.
Yeah. Then I think, unfortunately, part of it is kind of a mental thing of, well, now I don't have to because I can't. And I tend to liken this to money, because for some people, This is a totally different area to think about a skill. So let's say you're going on vacation and you and your partner, you plan out a budget and you know how much the vacation is going to cost. While you're on the vacation though, an excursion comes up that is a great opportunity, but it's going to cost $2,000 more. And you look at each other and you say, you know what? This is the only opportunity we're really going to have to do this. Let's go ahead. So you spend the extra $2,000, you enjoy it. But a few weeks later, you're home and you're looking at your bank statement and you say, wow, we spent a lot of money. I don't think I know anyone who at this point would say, you know what? We spent so much money on that vacation. Screw it. Let's just give away all of our money. Let's just throw it all away.
Mm, very good point.
But that's what we've learned to do around dieting. Mm. I've already messed it up. Doesn't matter what I do now. If I ate 4 cookies, I might as well eat 20. If I ate cookies today, I might as well keep getting them tomorrow. But we wouldn't do that about how we manage money.
That's a great analogy. I love that because,
yeah,
I can imagine myself in that scenario. And you put it so well, you know, you're here and you really have to think about it. You know, you're really tempted by this, but it's a significant amount of money. But you're there, wherever it is, that maybe you're never going to be there again. This is your opportunity to really enjoy this. But you're keenly aware that there is a cost attached that you're going to have to sort the consequences out of later. So, you know, you balance up. Is it worth it? Is this, you know, are the memories we're going to make with this? Is this experience going to be worth those consequences that are going to be a little bit hard later on? And like you say, you don't then say, well, screw it.
Yeah.
Let's blow the house.
And instead, actually what you do is you say, okay, now that we spent that extra, how will we adjust for the next month or so?
Mm.
Maybe it means in this budget example, maybe we don't eat out for a while. We save money there. Maybe we spend a little less discretionary funds for a while. And kind of catch up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really important. So yesterday was US Thanksgiving, as you mentioned, and I ate more food yesterday than I normally would eat in a day. I did still eat completely low carb or ketogenically. That did involve some low carb or keto dessert. So it was much more than what I usually indulge in, but it all was fairly safe food in that way. And so now, it's that idea of, I'm right back on track today. Today's a normal day, rather than saying, well, since I ate more yesterday, I might as well eat more today. I can say, hey, you had more than enough yesterday. Let's just be mindful today. You know me, Daisy, on these things. I try to encourage people not to get into shaming and blaming and not to take it from a punitive approach. Like, you ate so much yesterday, now you can't eat today, or you can't have anything for 2 weeks that you like, or something like that. I don't believe in punishing ourselves, but really just getting back on track, accepting I made that decision. Do I need to change any of my current behaviors because of that decision? Or let's say, for example, I had eaten more carbs yesterday. Okay, so today I need to get back onto my lower carb approach, you know, rather than writing it off. And that's the thing that I see so many people do during the holidays, is it becomes just a write-off. I've already gone overboard, or maybe even planning for it. You know, it's going to be really hard November and December, so I'll just wait until January. But the reality is, things compound positively or negatively. So if we're doing problematic behavior now, the effects of that compound over these 2 months of doing it.
Mm.
Positive behaviors also compound. I've had clients come back after the holidays and they say, Terry, and I work obviously for the fasting method. So I have clients come back and say, you know, I didn't do very much fasting over the holidays and I did eat some problematic food, but I didn't gain anything this year. And I said, well, how do you think that happened? And it's because they stuck with their other skills. They stayed with the time restricted eating. They didn't snack and graze all day. They didn't eat problematic food every meal. They managed it. And so I think it's also about thinking about the holidays as something you can do from a reasonable perspective rather than an all or nothing.
Yes, and not setting up too strict a plan, I guess, rolling with it as you go. I don't know. It is difficult. It's definitely something I struggle with, that all or nothing mentality, and I have got better at it. But I must admit, especially when it involves problem foods, as much as I think I can just have it as a one-off with one meal, more often than not, there is a cascade effect and an addictive type cycle sets in place that I have to clamp down. Now, I clamp down sooner, but I wonder what it is that I really need to focus on to break that cycle a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. Or maybe is it a question of just having to, and this is another all or nothing thing, I guess, having rules around certain foods that they really are an all or nothing, and abstaining from them.
I think figuring out ways to set parameters for ourselves, and some of us need very strict rules on certain things, and some of us need guidelines, and, you know, it's just different connotation to those two words. But for example, yesterday, the person hosting the dinner that I attended, he's actually recently started eating ketogenically, so it was kind of nice. We had both keto food options and non-keto. There were a number of people there that wanted their regular Thanksgiving traditional foods. But we had three desserts, and two of the desserts were ketogenic, and one was not. I made it a very clear point that I took a keto dessert because I knew enough people would eat it that I wouldn't have all of it.
Mm.
Because for me, the problem is if I make one, I'm going to want to eat the whole thing.
Same.
I made a pie. So I had a slice of pie and it was delicious. But I didn't have three slices of pie and I didn't bring home five pieces of pie. And so I think whether you're hosting an event or whether you're attending an event, thinking about how will you manage what you eat while you're there and what will happen with what's remaining after it. For me, taking a dessert to a place where there are other people is the best way for me to have a low-carb or ketogenic dessert, because then I will only have a serving. But if I make it and have it at home, I'll have the whole thing over the first day or maybe into the second day. So it's really problematic for me. So really just setting yourself up for success. If I'm going to engage with certain foods that are trigger foods for me, how will I do that in a way that feels more manageable? What limits do I need to set for myself?
Yes, and there are a couple of things there, aren't there, that you've mentioned really. It's what you've just said, but there's also the taking along an alternative. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of one step before, really, isn't it, in the preparation?
I think a big piece of that that I hear a lot of people describe that becomes challenging, and I think for most of us, depending on how long we've been eating in this particular way, it's learning how to advocate for yourself and not apologize for that or not feel bad about that. And so sometimes I will hear people say, well, I'm not hosting, so I'm going to someone else's house, so I can't help. I just have to eat whatever they have. I encourage you, offer to bring a couple of things, and maybe not even offer as if, would you like me to bring something? But so for example, I made keto stuffing. And so I might say to whoever's hosting, I don't eat bread. And so I'm going to make a particular stuffing, and I can bring enough for other people to eat it, or I can bring just enough for me and whoever. But that way I had stuffing for my Thanksgiving, which is my favorite food from Thanksgiving dinner. But I didn't have to leave myself up to whatever was available. So as you said, taking some side dishes or taking some food with you that you can eat. Just like if I were going to go to eat with someone who eats a vegan diet, I might want to take a protein with me that is meat, because that's how I eat. And so I don't think we have to get so sensitive about whether we're going to hurt someone's feelings. We can do it very respectfully and acknowledge, I don't eat that food, and so I'm going to bring this. Would you like me to bring enough for everyone or just a serving for myself? I also took a pecan pie that was ketogenic. Everyone else was welcome to have some if they wanted, but that way I had in place what was safe for me.
Yes, I really like that approach. You know, you're being polite and considerate with your host, but you're not setting it up as a question. Mm-hmm. You're setting it up as a statement. There's a question in there, would you like me to bring enough for other people? But you're not entertaining a question on whether you're going to be bringing some of these things mm-hmm. for yourself. And I, you know, I can't imagine many people taking offense to that. Mm-hmm. That brings me to a point that it's something that we've talked about quite a lot, that's come up quite a lot on Monday Mindset, about mental rehearsing and how effective it can be. You know, that your body doesn't necessarily know the difference between something you're mentally rehearsing or actually doing. And I just wonder whether, I mean, this is a technique I've employed myself, especially when it comes to repetitive thing like holiday dinners, that there is a sort of a norm. There are quite often cultural traditions, family traditions, all these things that you feel like are sort of a little bit set in stone and so easily can be used as an excuse. And of course, you can mentally rehearse. We've just sort of been talking about that, but you can set it up in your mind. Well, this is the way it happens. These are the foods that are going to be. This is the protocol, you know. My mum lays out food from the minute I walk in the door. We're expected to do this. We're expected to do that. This is the way it's going to be. You imagine it. You mentally rehearse it in your head and you write it off before you even get there, before you've even set foot in the door. You know, is there something with thinking through all the potential problems, pitfalls, things that have tripped you up before, and mentally rehearsing a different day in your mind and thinking about the things that might go wrong or thinking about the challenges that might arise. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say you don't want, you know, your mother's best ever pecan pie or whatever it is, you know, the slice of Christmas cake, the Christmas pudding that's, you know, is a family tradition. Well, why aren't you having some? You always have some. It's tradition. I feel offended if you're not going to have it. You know, thinking these things through, mentally rehearsing things that you might say, and alongside that, having some practical tips like you've already talked about and preparing about taking some alternatives so that you know you're going to have something else so that you're not going to feel left out when somebody, and more often than not, it does come down to the sweet treats, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That you feel left out, you feel deprived, you know, as much as you say, well, I just won't have any, when you actually get there, it's really, really difficult to resist them. So having that simple, practical mm-hmm. alternative of taking something else with you, you know, and I've talked about this before when I went on my camping trip, that's something I did and it was really, really helpful and it worked a treat. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much, you know, there could be something in mentally rehearsing some strategies as well, things that you might say.
Absolutely. Practicing, it helps us to model something to say, practice it, hear ourselves say it before we're sitting in front of others having to say it, so that it sounds natural to you and you can kind of practice what sounds best to you. And then also kind of mentally rehearsing not only the decisions in the moment, but the recovery process. How will I come out of that day? So yesterday I came home and of course there were leftovers and I was almost uncomfortably full. We'd eaten early in the afternoon. So I acknowledged I'm done for the day. I've had plenty of food. I enjoyed delicious food and I'm good. I'm good to stop here. So telling myself that I've had enough, not in a shaming and blaming way, but just in a convincing my mind, helping my mind to recognize it was enough, that was done. And then rehearsing, how would today go? I'm right back on my normal way of eating and normal meal times and things. And again, I think your point of this is so important. What a lot of us have done for years is we've mentally rehearsed the opposite. We've mentally rehearsed going down those paths that we know are danger zones for us, feeling powerless to stop it, giving in to continuing down that path, and hoping that we can pull ourselves out of it in a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, next year. And you and I both know, unfortunately, just as human beings, if we put off, let's say, for example, using this season right now, if we put it off and just kind of do it a write-off until January, by then it feels daunting because now you have to do more work to get that momentum going again.
Yeah, you've got the whole inertia of
absolutely
not starting from scratch, but it kind of feels almost like you are.
Yeah.
And of course, you remember what it was like to start and the challenges of that.
Absolutely. And so most of us don't really want to have to go through that harder work stage. And so January becomes February, it becomes March, and we still haven't really gotten back on track fully or haven't gotten back to where we wanted to be. And now suddenly it's June and we're still struggling with the consequences of what we did back in November and December. And so then it has so much longer term consequences. So instead, to really mentally rehearse this time as, I know how I'm going to handle this birthday celebration. I know how I'm going to handle this holiday or this religious celebration or whatever the occasion is. And not only how I'm going to handle it, but how I will handle when it doesn't go exactly on path, how will I recover from it? The other thing that I think is really important about any of these, you know, this season of holidays for some people, back in September, certain people were celebrating a series of holidays, you know, other people have other groups of holidays coming. I think another piece of it for many of us ties in with emotional eating and nostalgia and, again, family or cultural tradition, and that it feels like it won't be complete if I'm not eating that particular dessert or that particular bread item or something. Like, how could I celebrate Christmas without stuffing, or how could I celebrate it without Christmas pudding or something?
Yes, particularly if there are foods that you keep for particular days or seasons, they do become really tied up with it.
So I think two things, as you and I are both well aware, and I think most of your listeners are, there are so many available recipes that you can adapt almost anything you traditionally eat and make it something that fits a more ketogenic or a low carb way of eating. So that's one option. And the other is to work on letting it go. Not the tradition itself, not the meaning, but the eating of that food. I talk a lot about kind of emotional eating tied to people we love or memories that are really positive memories for us. I use the example of my mom at Christmas time. There were two Christmas treats that she really loved. Now, actually, she loved a lot of them, and we would have a lot of different cookies in our house. There was like weeks of baking and just cookies and bars and things for weeks and weeks. No idea how I became diabetic and overweight. But there were two specific little treats. These are these peppermint nougat kind of chewy things, and she loved pecan turtles. Now, to this day, I think of my mom when I see those in the store. And they do, they bring back a kind of sweet memory of my mom. Like, oh boy, she would want a whole box of those. But I really try to emphasize for myself and for others, I can share in that positive memory without buying them and eating them. So even if I'm with other people who are eating them, I could just acknowledge in that moment, my mom would want to be eating those right now. I can think back to watching her eat them and the memory of it. I don't have to engage in it myself. So I think even if the food at the table has emotional connections, for us to really start working on, I want to experience the emotional, the positive thing there emotionally for me without the negative consequence of the food. And I think we all can do that, but we have to start acknowledging that. That food has an emotional tie for me that doesn't justify eating it. How else can I just connect with that positive meaning or positive memory or feeling without engaging in the food itself?
Not always easy, but yeah.
Well, you know what I think of? So for example, I grew up in a family where we celebrated Christmas. I'm not a little kid anymore. I don't have Santa fantasies. but when it comes to Christmas, I still remember the fun of being seven and running downstairs and remembering how excited I was that Santa had brought all that stuff under the tree and opening my stocking. So again, I can relive those happy memories. I don't have to actually run downstairs and see it to experience that. And I think with food, many of us have just made the connection so tied to eating the food that that's how we believe we need to experience it.
Yes, it's very difficult, isn't it? And I think that's part of it, is figuring out what the attachment is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that can help decide what your strategy is. You know, is it an almost purely an emotional attachment, that it's not actually really the food itself that you like, you're eating it to try and reconnect with that memory or that emotion, in which case you can detach them and form a strategy around that. Or if it's the food itself that you really look forward to and enjoy, because then it's not so easy to let go of that food. And I guess that's where the alternatives come in. The difficulty can be, I think, when there isn't an alternative, because there isn't an alternative for everything. And I know I'm sort of digging into the, yes, but there are these things, but there are some things, and I know there are some things that personally I struggle with that is not really a so much an emotional thing that I can divorce the two, and it's more of a food item that I've either got to decide that I'm just not going to have it, but I can't really come up with an alternative for it either. So, you know, there are just these tricky situations mm-hmm. that I don't know what the answer is.
I think the answers vary. You know, for some of us, unfortunately, it means I need to let go of that want.
Mm.
Just like people who used to smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day and finally decided they would stop smoking. It's not as though they never want a cigarette, but they learn to say, I'm not going to choose that thing that I used to enjoy because of the effects it has on me.
Yes. Why is it so much more difficult, it seems? Well, I suppose it depends what your substance of choice is.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, I was addicted to cigarettes. I smoked for a long time. I smoked for 10 years. Took me a couple of times to give up, but I gave up relatively easily, actually, compared to some people. But when, you know, certain food things, but I guess it just does depend what the things are that you specifically are attached to.
And I think, you know, what meanings we've made of them, what messaging we've connected to them. There's this great book called Rational Recovery, and it's actually about alcohol recovery, but another author used it as the basis of her book called Brain Over Binge, and just really talks about the idea that the urge to drink, if you're recovering from alcohol addiction, the urge to drink is the thing to address, not the underlying reasons, the psychological things, the nostalgia of it. I have an urge. That's a lower part of my brain. I think they, in that book, refer to it kind of as neurological junk. And I don't have to act on that. The other part of my brain gets to make the decision, and that's the part that controls whether I drink or not, or whether I eat that food or not. I think this is a really powerful concept. It's okay to have the urge. That's natural. Your brain is wired for that. You've enjoyed that food for years. The difference is you can disconnect and say, I'm not going to act on that urge. My guess is for you, Daisy, based on what you just said, that at some point, the reasons to not smoke outweighed the reasons to smoke.
Mm.
The longer-term gain, the longer-term benefit weighed out more than satisfying that urge in the moment. And I think a lot of us struggle with that with food.
Yes, that's a very good point. And I've almost, you know, I've got an image really of a child like me stamping my foot. And really, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just me stamping my foot. Yeah, but I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is a good thing to think about the giving up smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, there would have been some foot stamping with that as well. I don't want to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I quite like this. But there are some sensible reasons to do it.
Yep.
which is what came in. It was a financial decision, actually. Mm-hmm. And I railed against it. I actually had dreams about stabbing people for 2 weeks, which I'm sure you would have something to say about. But I got through it. There were sensible reasons. That part of my brain took over. And, you know, it dictated to the childish one stamping her foot, we're not going to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. But interestingly, my guess is you don't sometimes smoke a cigarette.
No. I mean, yes, I went through, interestingly, again, I did kind of go through that phase mm-hmm. until I, you know, I stopped and it was an absolute final thing. But there was that sort of, that period of time where, you know, it would be when I had a drink, I would have a cigarette, and, you know, but there came a point where there was a hard line. And after that, mm-hmm. I never smoked again. And I'm at that point now where it's disgusting to me and I would never want to. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's interesting, actually, mm-hmm. you know, as I'm processing this and thinking about what you're saying, it's, but I just think it could be useful sometimes to Absolutely. Be thinking about a similar situation and how you dealt with it.
I think it's similar. I'll go back to the money example, because many people who have struggled with health and weight, you know, there are so many emotional things tied to it for many people, and shame, and it's a coping mechanism. You know, we've learned to use food to cope with difficult situations, with uncomfortable emotions. But let's say someone wants to save $1 million. When they have $10 in their pocket, if they're really geared toward that goal, those people are pretty good at saying, hey, I don't want to spend this $10. I'm going to put it here in my bank account. Mm-hmm. And every time they're depositing into their account, they realize I'm working toward that goal. Ooh, look, I'm getting closer. Yes, I put in a deposit today. And so if you have those skills, maybe focus on how can I make that true for me around food? How can I transfer or translate that skill? So if you've given up alcohol, if you've given up cigarettes, if you've given up spending money on certain things because you know the consequences of those things are too costly to you, that you have a great blueprint on changing some food patterns as well.
Mm. Yes, interesting.
So one last thing, Daisy, that I would say about the holidays is that I think for many of us, holidays or special things, and I know we've just spent a lot of time talking a lot about it, but I think for most of us, it also would be good if we shrunk the importance of it in our mind. People start talking about what they're going to do for Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas mm. here. In July, they start anticipating yeah. it, dreading
often,
it.
Yeah, as soon as one is finished, yeah. thinking about next year.
And for people who have changed how they're eating or who are working on fasting or whatever, they start to feel tension about it. Oh no, this is coming. How will I handle it? And I think we give it so much more power than it needs. Mm. And so the more we can start to just minimize it, for example, let's say you're in the US and you do celebrate these holidays. There's Halloween, which is actually, you know, pretty much for kids, but there's Halloween, there's Thanksgiving, there's Christmas, there's New Year's. For each of those, or for at least the last few, you might have a couple of days of celebrating with various friends or family groups or whatever. So over a 60 or more day period, you have about 4 or 5 or 6 days that you have to face what you're going to do. I just think if we could even kind of focus on it less, trust ourselves, handle the day, do the day, and keep going. There are so many more days in those 2 months that don't involve food or food as celebration. I really think there's some wisdom in making them less significant for us.
Yes, it's a very good point. Mm.
And I think that about vacations too. Mm. You know, so many of us have learned, oh, I'm going to such and such a place, so I'm going to eat this and I have to eat this while I'm there and this. We make the vacation about food. And for any of us who have struggled with obesity, wanting to lose weight, type 2 diabetes, that mentality is really problematic for us. Vacation focus on food is going to cause us more difficulty. Holidays focused on food are going to cause us more difficulty. Mm. And so I try, and it's not a perfect thing even on my part at this point, but I can think if I'm going, let's say, for example, people say, yeah, but it's my family. They put so much emphasis on it. let them continue to put the emphasis on it. You deal with it for one day. You know, you don't have to put so much emphasis on it.
Yeah. And again, it kind of just comes back to this all or nothing mentality, doesn't it? When you say about holidays, and there is an argument when you're going, especially if you're going somewhere new, somewhere abroad, that there are some, you know, local dishes and things that you're only going to get one time to try them. It doesn't mean that you can't make really good choices for the majority of time that you're there and still have some tastes of these different things. Even if it's, you know, I don't know, enjoying the fabulous Italian gelato every day for your holiday. That doesn't mean the rest of the day, most of the other meals you have can't be good choices. And it's the same over the holiday period. Even if you have a complete blowout meal on some of these days, it doesn't mean that the rest of the day you can't make good decisions, the rest of the week, the rest of this period you can't make good decisions. And, you know, even if you go with all the best intentions, if you've rehearsed it all, you've got all the lines to come out with, you've taken your alternatives, and you still have some things, and you don't need to feel like a failure. Don't beat yourself up, because that's almost going to be a guarantee, if you're like me anyway, if you feel guilty, that you're going to want to reach for these things the next day.
Absolutely.
Is snapping back into your normal routine the next day, remembering, like you say, that for most of us, it's a handful at most. Maybe it's two handfuls of days over a month or two. But that doesn't mean to say the rest of it can't carry on as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting back to it quicker, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just focusing on making the best of it, making the best choices you can on those days, and just getting back to normal.
Absolutely.
Well, as so often is the case with you, I've worked through a few things in my own mind, had a little bit of a mini therapy session, but I feel like I've worked through some things and had a few light bulb moments with how I'm going to cope with some of the yes, but child stamping, foot stamping moments that were going on in my mind. So I hope other people have found some of this useful, have some useful takeaways that are going to help through this period that really doesn't need to be, like you say, you don't need to put so much emphasis on it being a problematic period as much as we do.
Absolutely.
And of course, you know, we are at that point where
Terry starts
grimacing. Can we have your festive holiday top tip, please?
I'm going to refer to something that is talked about often in most self-growth and discovery and self-improvement kind of thoughts and entrepreneurial spaces and everything. But, you know, really focusing on our why without making it a shame and blame thing. But for example, I want to be healthy. I want to be happy. I want to be mobile. And so if you can think of whether it's a holiday celebration, a birthday, a family gathering, if you think about the word celebration, I think we almost automatically, you probably type it in on your phone and you're going to see food pop up or something. But if you can think about, how do I want to celebrate me? How do I want to celebrate me on Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. How do I want to celebrate me on my best friend's birthday? How do I want to celebrate me on Rosh Hashanah? That celebrating me comes with doing what's good for my body. I want it to taste good. I want to enjoy it. But going overboard, binging or eating food that is so triggering for me that I can't come off of it for weeks and months, that really doesn't feel very celebratory anymore. And so just to really keep in mind, how do I celebrate me in this moment? And maybe the meaning of why I'm connecting with people or what holiday I'm honoring at this time, how do I do that without harming myself and my goal? Because if I want to be mobile, happy, healthy, non-diabetic, healthy weight, I can't keep doing that with things that interfere.
Yes, and why not set up some new traditions You know, I'm already looking forward to a new Christmas Day tradition of getting in the sea.
Nice.
By all accounts, it's, you know, it's quite a big thing. People dress up and things like that. So, yes, why not set up some new traditions that have nothing to do with food, but make you just as happy?
And this is the thing about habit change. If we do it and reinforce it, at some point, Daisy, that will be so much more rewarding for you than hot cross buns.
Yes, or mince pies.
Right?
And I've forgotten who I'm wanting to say, Mike Murdoch. It's one of the quotes I'm using for the social media for Monday Mindset next week, I think. But he talks about, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along the lines of, you can't extinguish a bad habit, but you can replace it with another one. Mm-hmm. So yes, think about replacing those quote unquote bad habits with new better ones that celebrate you. I like that, thinking about how can I celebrate me, honor me with some new traditions.
Absolutely.
Fabulous. Well, thank you once again for a fabulous Mindset Matters episode. It has been a great pleasure as always, Terry. Thank you.
Thanks for having me here, Daisy.
Thank you for staying with me right to the very end. I hope you found that every bit as useful as I did. I've been getting such great feedback about Terry's Mindset Matters episodes that I'm sure you enjoyed it. For this week's end quote, I thought I would use the quote that I mentioned just at the end of the episode there. One, because it's quite a good quote, but two, because I attributed it to the wrong person. It wasn't Mike Murdoch, it was, in fact, Charles Duhigg. So this week's end quote is from Charles Duhigg. The golden rule of habit change. You can't extinguish a bad habit. You can only change it. So there you have it. As we mentioned a bit in the episode, maybe replace some of those quote unquote bad habits with some more productive ones and hopefully enjoyable too. Well, I'm very much looking forward to the week ahead. As I said, I've got some fun things to look forward to. I very much hope that you do too, that you are heading into a fabulous weekend to start off a fabulous week next week. And I will see you back here next time. So until then, please take very good care and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.